you. Soon the path will stop, and the rest of the mountain is a wall straight up to the plateau on top. The wall is impossible to climb. The only way up is a ride from the dragons. And you really think those dragons will fly us up the mountain? Chris asked. Because in case you forgot, Helios hates us. He blames us for killing that cow, and he convinced Ethan to turn against us. Why would his dragons agree to help us? Dragons are notoriously selfish, Erebus said, as if we should have known that already. If you offer them something that they want badly enough, they'll likely provide their services in return. Remember to be civil and diplomatic while speaking with them, and you'll be fine. Hold up, Chris laughed. These dragons talk? Of course dragons talk, Erebus scoffed. They're some of the most civilized and wisest creatures in the world, besides gods, obviously. That changes everything, Chris said. Since they talk, I can use the lyre on them. That makes sense, Danielle nodded and turned to Erebus. What do you think? He glanced up and chewed on his lower lip, as if something about the suggestion didn't sit right with him.
I think that's a solid move, he finally said, meeting our gazes again.
So why did you hesitate? Danielle asked.
No reason, he said. Chris is right. You should use the lyre.
Okay. I ignored the tension in the air, trying to sound more confident than I felt. So, where can we find the dragons?
At the end of the path, he replied, pointing forward. There's a cliff at the point where the jungle meets the clouds, with a view across the entire realm. It's the dragon's favorite spot in all of Kerberos.
Then what are we waiting for?
Chris placed his hand on his lyre and puffed out his chest, turning to continue along the path.
Let's go meet these dragons.
Chapter 37. We continued along the path, through the hot and sticky jungle. I sweated out the water in my body as quickly as I could drink it. Sweat soaked my hair and clothes, and it was hard to believe that recently I'd been in a desert, wishing for humidity. Now I felt like I was drowning in the hot, wet air. It was so thick that it was hard to breathe. Eventually, the trees thinned out, opening up into a clearing. When we stepped into it, I saw them. Four orange dragons. They were large, but not so large that they dwarfed us. If I reached up, I would be able to touch their heads. They stood next to a cliff, which, like Erebus said, looked out over all of Kerberos. When the clouds parted, I saw the desert, the Red River, the River of Dreams, and I could just barely make out the whispering forest along the horizon. It was crazy to think about how far we'd traveled to get here. The dragons watched us with thoughtful, yellow eyes. The largest one stepped forward, observing each of us individually as if it was trying to size us up. I swallowed, nervous for whatever was going to happen next. As intimidating as these creatures were, they were majestic as well. And I had no idea what to expect from them. We continued to stare at each other. And then the dragon in front shifted into human form. The others followed his lead. There were two males and two females. They all had matching yellow eyes, bright, fiery hair, and bodies that would make the most beautiful of humans jealous. They were also all naked. I suppose that as dragons, they felt no need for modesty, but I averted my eyes just the same.
What brings you here?
The dragon who'd shifted first finally spoke, his voice wise and deep. Chris reached for his lyre and began to play, the notes filling the clearing. But unlike the previous times when he'd played the lyre, when I'd wanted to close my eyes and lose myself in the music, something sounded off. Out of tune.
I doubted that people who weren't attuned to music would be able to tell, but I could clearly hear the difference.
We need a ride to the top of the mountain, Chris said, continuing to pluck and strum the lyre. The four of you will fly us up there, wait while we complete our task, fly us back down to the portal to Earth, and once we've returned home to Earth, you'll forget that you ever met us.
He stopped playing the lyre and watched the dragons, waiting for them to follow his command. I held my breath and gripped my bow, praying that the lyre was still in tune enough to work. Because without the lyre, how were we supposed to convince the dragons to fly us to the top of the mountain? The male dragon who'd spoken first snorted, a puff of smoke billowing out of his nose.
Why should we do as you say, mortal?
He asked, his voice booming so loudly now that I could feel its vibrations in my bones.
Because the lyre.
Chris glanced back at me, his eyes wide in panic. One of the female dragons stepped up to join the first.
You thought you could use Apollo's golden lyre on us? She sneered.
We are dragons. We are not silly creatures who can be wooed by the sound of music. You dare to think us so naive, so easily pliable. You think you can insult us in this way? Chris lowered his hands to the strings, as if to try playing again. Don't. I reached for his hand to stop him, speaking as quietly as possible. The lyre's out of tune. It won't work.
Then what are we supposed to do?
His eyes were wide, panicked.
We need to get up that mountain.
Don't you think I know that? I hissed.
There's no need to speak so quietly,
the first dragon, who I assumed was the leader, said.
Our ears are far more advanced than yours, and we can hear every word.
Danielle stepped up beside me and leveled her gaze with the dragons. It was wrong of us to use the lyre, and I apologize on behalf of my group, she said. We're just in a hurry, and we thought it would be the fastest way to complete our mission. But now that you know why we traveled so far to seek you out, I must ask, is there anything you can do to help us? None of the dragons betrayed an ounce of emotion. I leaned back and looked at each of them nervously. But they just watched us as if we were bugs they could easily squash.
Of course we can help you,
the leader finally said.
We can fly you to the top of the mountain, wait for you to finish whatever you set out to do there, fly you back down to the portal, and allow you to return to Earth. But what we can do, and what we want to do, are different things entirely. Just because we can do something doesn't mean that we want to do it, or that we will do it. You see, for us to want to do this for you, we need something worthy from you in return.
And after you tried to manipulate us with a golden lyre, what we want to do right now is kill you, one of the female dragons added, grinning maliciously. I looked to Erebus for help, but he stood silently to the side, watching us as if he couldn't care less how this confrontation ended. It didn't make sense. I knew from all the ways he'd helped us so far that he did care. Why was he acting so nonchalant now? Primordial deities could be so frustrating sometimes. But I didn't have time to worry about him right now, so I turned my focus back to the dragons. What exactly do you want? I asked the leader. I held tightly onto my bow. I didn't want to use my final crystal arrow, but I wouldn't hesitate if it were necessary. Everything we have is back on Earth, but perhaps we could make a deal. Tell us what you want, and if we have it, we'll send it back to Kerberos once we've returned home.
That isn't how these deals work,
he said.
This is how they work. You must first present a gift to us. Then we will decide if we wish to accept your gift or not. If we accept, we will do as you asked, in return. If we do not accept, normally we would let you go on your way. But after you insulted us by attempting to use that instrument to manipulate our thoughts and actions, that will not be the case this time.
You cannot get away with trickery like that and live, the female added, as if we were too stupid to understand her the first time she'd said so. Unless, of course, you offer us something tempting enough to change our minds.
I could give you the lyre, Chris offered, holding it out to them. The deal would make sense, since the lyre is what angered you in the first place, right?
What use have we for that lyre? The leader sneered. It only works when tuned, and it can only be tuned by Apollo. Apollo has never stepped foot into Kerberos, and if the portal ever opens, I doubt he would agree to tune it for us. Your offer of an out-of-tune magical lyre that only works when it's in tune is insulting. I hereby reject your offer, and I hope, for your sakes, that you do not propose such an offensive offer again.
The other dragons nodded, clearly in agreement with their leader's sentiments. What about my remaining crystal arrow along with the golden bow? I said. When the crystal arrow is shot with the golden bow, it's guaranteed to hit its target, as long as the target is in sight. Nothing like that exists in the entire world.
That last fact is true.
The leader pressed his lips together and stared down at the arrow in my hand. Finally, he raised his gaze to mine, his amber eyes flashing with suspicion.
But does the arrow's magic last indefinitely? I see you have other similar arrows in your quiver, and yet you say that this one in your hand is the only one of its kind, which leads me to believe that the magic in the arrow is limited, and the ones in your quiver have already reached that limit.
The arrow can only be used once, I admitted. But if you choose when to use it wisely, as I'm sure you would, it would be an extremely useful weapon to have at your disposal.
The golden bow is a beautiful weapon, the female purred. But an arrow with magic that will disappear after one shot is hardly a fair bargain in exchange for a favor from all four of us.
Per usual, I agree with my mate,
the leader said.
Both of your offers thus far have been subpar. What else do you have to give?
Like I said, we have a lot back on Earth, I said, trying to think of something we could part with that they might value. Do you have guns in Kerberos? I haven't seen any so far. They're the most powerful handheld weapons on Earth. With enough bullets, you'll be victorious against any opponent.
They were locked into Kerberos over 3,000 years ago, Danielle whispered to me, rolling her eyes. Guns didn't exist back then. They probably have no idea what they are.
Silence,
the leader commanded, and Danielle clasped her mouth shut, stopping mid-sentence.
We've heard of these guns you speak of, and we have no use for such crude, mortal weapons. What else do you have to offer? Think long and hard, as I'm growing tired of your insolent suggestions.
Danielle reached for the handle of her sword, and I shook my head, trying to will her to stop. We'd trekked through Antarctica for that sword, talked our way into Keone's ice palace, and risked our lives to free it from the block of ice that had encased it for multiple millennia as it waited for the one deemed worthy by the goddess Aphrodite to free it. Danielle, a descendant of Aphrodite herself, had removed it from the ice. That sword was her destiny. No. I stepped forward, stopping her before she could pull out the sword. We have so much back on Earth. We just need to think. What do we have that they might want? There has to be something.
Our patience is wearing thin,
the leader said.
and we will do nothing for you unless your offer is in your possession and handed over to us now. So tell us, child,
he said, his eyes twinkling with greed as he stared down at Danielle.
What is it that you wish to offer?
Chapter 38. Danielle removed the sword and held it up high, the gold shining so brightly under the amber sun that I had to shield my eyes to protect them from the light. The golden sword of Athena, she said, looking like a goddess herself as she presented the ancient weapon to the dragons. It was forged by Athena at the beginning of time, and is blessed with the ability to cut through any material in the universe. The golden sword is so powerful that the gods locked it away for thousands of years, making it accessible only to the one they deemed worthy to retrieve it. My ancestor Aphrodite cast the spell to lock away the sword, and she chose me as the one to free it, so that I could use it to behead the Gorgon Medusa. But I've already completed that task, so if you deem the sword an acceptable trade, I will hand it over to you in return for your services. The dragon said nothing, practically salivating as they admired the sword.
The golden sword of Athena,
the leader finally said, smiling greedily at the item he spoke of.
Every creature on Earth, and Kerberos, has heard of this weapon, but few have seen it with their own eyes.
He reached forward and opened his hand, waiting for Danielle to hand over the sword. She stepped back, moving it out of his reach. I won't give it to you until you agree to do as we asked, she said.
Silly girl,
he snarled.
You expect us to accept your offer without us first confirming that this is the mythical sword you speak of? Let me hold it first. Then I will decide whether or not to accept your offer.
You would be able to tell that this is the golden sword just by holding it? I asked him.
Of course,
he said.
You forget, young mortal, what creatures you are speaking to. We are dragons. We know and recognize precious metals better than any creature in the universe.
Perhaps even better than the blacksmith god Hephaestus himself.
It's a good thing that Hephaestus can't hear through the realms,
Erebus chuckled,
because he would not be happy to hear you say that. It is the truth.
The leader held his head proudly, focusing on Danielle.
Now, will you allow me to inspect the sword or not?
You promise that if you choose not to accept the deal, you'll give the sword back to me? She asked.
If this sword is what you say it is, then we will be accepting your deal,
he said.
You have my word.
Do you swear it on the gods themselves? I asked.
Yes, I swear my word to Zeus and the Olympians.
Not only the Olympians, I said. The Olympians don't reside in Kerberos. So swearing to them while here means nothing. I glanced back at Erebus, hoping the human form he'd taken around us wasn't recognizable to any of the creatures here. He nodded, very subtly, so I turned back to the dragon and continued. Swear on the primordial deities Nyx and Erebus themselves. The dragon raised an eyebrow.
What do you know of the primordial deities?
He asked. I know enough. I held his fiery gaze, refusing to back down. Why are you stalling? If you intend to keep your word, I don't see why this is a problem.
Fine,
he huffed.
If this is the golden sword of Athena, then I promise on the primordial deities Nyx and Erebus that I and my companions will accept your deal.
Danielle stepped forward, still holding tightly onto the sword. Repeat the terms of the deal, she commanded.
to ensure that your oath is legitimate.
She raised the sword, ready to swing it at the nearest dragon.
If you don't, then I'll demonstrate that this is the golden sword of Athena by slicing your friend here in half. Since you've already threatened to kill us, I have nothing to lose if I take him and anyone else I can slice apart down with us, do I?
Stand down.
The leader narrowed his eyes at Danielle, but she remained where she stood.
If this is the golden sword of Athena, then I promise on the primordial deities Nyx and Erebus that I and my three companions with me here now will fly you to the top of the mountain, wait for you while you complete your task up there, and then fly you back down to the portal. And not attack us once we're back at the portal,
Chris added.
You'll allow us safely through, and we'll mention to no one that you ever saw us. And you also need to specify that you'll take us to each location exactly when we're ready to go there, and no later.
I looked at him, my eyes wide. Not because I was shocked that he was requiring so much from the dragons, but because I was impressed that he was being so detailed in the wording of the agreement. Since the day I met him, I knew that Chris was a good-hearted person, but I hadn't thought of him as particularly smart. Perhaps I'd been too quick to judge.
What?
Chris smiled at me sheepishly, and he shrugged.
It's what Kate would ask of them if she were here with us now.
True. My eyes watered at the mention of Kate. But I blinked back my tears and turned back to the dragons, not wanting to show them any weakness.
Do you accept our deal?
The leader pursed his lips, and my heart pounded with fear that he would say no.
We accept,
he finally said, and he repeated the oath with the inclusion of Chris's additions.
You're quite a demanding group of mortals, aren't you?
We're offering you the golden sword of Athena, I reminded him. All we're requesting is a fair trade.
And if this sword isn't actually the golden sword, then I don't think we have to spell it out for you again, what we'll do to you for your earlier deception, do we?
He raised an eyebrow, and I wondered how stupid he thought we were. Apparently very. I was beginning to hate dragons more than I had when I'd seen them flying Ethan and Blake to the top of the mountain.
Let me guess,
Chris said, sounding surprisingly cheery.
You'll kill us?
Yes, the female hissed. At least one of you catches on quickly.
You won't be killing any of us.
Danielle lowered the sword and held it out to the leader.
Because this is the golden sword of Athena. See for yourself.
Chapter 39. The dragon took the sword and weighed it in his hand, studying it carefully. He held it at multiple angles, examining every inch from the tip to the handle. His expression was blank and impossible to read. I could barely breathe as I watched him, terrified that he would declare the sword fake and attack us simply for the sake of it. Eventually, he held up his other hand, extended his claws, and sliced the sword through the longest one. The nail dropped to the ground. The three other dragons all sucked in deep breaths, staring at the fallen nail. None of them moved. Then the leader kneeled down, scooped up a handful of dirt, and placed the nail inside. He poured the dirt over the nail, burying it. Once it was fully covered, he stood back up and looked at us.
Only the golden sword of Athena can slice through a dragon's claw,
he said.
You are correct. This is the golden sword.
And now it's ours. The female reached for it greedily, but he held it closer, not handing it to her. She frowned and took a step away from him, saying nothing.
Yes, it's yours.
Danielle backed up to join Chris and me, looking wistfully at the sword.
And since you agree to our terms, you'll shift back into your dragon forms and fly us up the mountain now.
Mortals.
The other male in the group sneered, the one who hadn't spoken up until now.
Are you truly so naive? The Olympians can't step foot in this realm. The Titans are trapped at the top of the mountain, and the primordial deities stopped caring about what happened to those of us here long ago. In Kerberos, we have no gods. Oaths mean nothing here.
He shifted into dragon form, took a deep breath, and released a blaze of fire from his nostrils. If Blake were here, and if we could access our powers here, he would hold out his hands and shield us from the fire. But Blake wasn't here, and our powers were inaccessible while we weren't on Earth. So I screamed and turned away, holding my arms up in front of my head as I prepared for the flames to consume me. Chapter 40. The fire didn't come. The heat was so close that I could feel it on my skin, and then it was gone. Was I dead? I'd expected to feel pain, to feel the agonizing torture of those final moments when I burned to death. But there was nothing. Was Dragonfire so powerful that death was instantaneous? I lowered my arms and opened my eyes, facing the dragons. The three of them in human form were still there. But the one who had shifted back into dragon form and tried to kill us was gone. The only evidence that he'd been there at all were the two large footprints on the ground where he'd stood. The other female in the group, who I guessed was his mate, screamed and searched the area where he'd been standing, her arms flailing around the empty space. "Where is he?" she yelled, her eyes ablaze. "What did you do to him?" Erebus stepped forward, his gaze dark and unwavering.
"Your leader swore an oath to the gods, and the three of you agreed. Your companion broke that oath. Therefore, he has been pulverized."
"The gods deserted us long ago," the female spat. "What do you know of oaths, mortal?"
"I know more than you realize, dragon."
He spoke the name of her breed as if it were an insult.
"And I know that you cannot deny what you saw with your own eyes. You made an oath to the primordial deities Nyx and Erebus. The moment your mate betrayed that oath, he disappeared into darkness itself. Do you wish to test the gods further? Or will you be true to your word and honor your promise?"
She dropped her hands to her sides, fear flashing in her eyes.
"If we do as we promised, will my mate be returned?" she asked.
"I cannot say for sure," Erebus said. "But after what you just witnessed, do you really want to test what will happen if you refuse?"
I half expected her to shift forms and breathe flames at us so she could join her mate. Instead, she narrowed her eyes and stepped back behind her leader.
"You speak confidently for a mortal," she said, studying Erebus suspiciously.
"I have seen much from my years."
His expression betrayed nothing.
"You've sworn an oath to the gods, and while they may have ignored Kerberos in the past, they are paying attention now. Try anything else, and you will experience their wrath."
The female opened her mouth as if she was going to say more, but her leader interrupted before she could speak.
"The gods are clearly watching out for you,"
he said to us, holding his hand out to the female in a signal for her to be quiet.
"We will not test them again. When do you wish us to fly you to the top of the mountain?"
"We leave now," I said. And he nodded, shifting back to dragon form. He still held the golden sword with his front claw. The other two dragons shifted forms as well. They stretched their wings and raised their necks to the sky,
ready to take flight. Then they lowered themselves to the ground. I assumed they wanted us to hop onto their backs.
Nicole, you ride on the back of the leader,
Erebus instructed.
Chris will ride his mate. Danielle and I will be together on the other female.
He didn't wait for us to agree. Instead, he strolled over to the female, lifted Danielle onto her back, and jumped up to join her. I hopped onto the back of the leader, and Chris did the same on his mate. Chris winced slightly when putting pressure on his arm, but I looked away, pretending not to notice. There was nothing I could do for him now. The most I could do was to make sure we finished our mission as quickly as possible so we could get back to Earth where I could heal him. I situated myself on the dragon's back, holding on to the ridges of his neck. He stood up, and the ground grew further away from me, making my stomach feel like it was rising into my throat. What if I fell off? I'd ridden horses before, but a dragon? I didn't even think that dragons existed before entering Kerberos. It was finally sinking in that we would be flying, high above the ground, with nothing strapping me in to keep me safe. I swallowed, feeling like I was about to be sick. I didn't want to do this, but I didn't have a choice. I had to do it if I wanted to reach Blake. So I bent my legs at the knees, using my thigh muscles to put pressure on the dragon's sides to keep my balance, as I would while riding a horse. His scales were sharp and rough, digging into my bare skin. "Don't let me fall, okay?" I whispered to him, tightening my grip so much that my knuckles turned white. He didn't reply, instead spreading his wings and running toward the cliff. The wind rushed past my face and through my hair, and I screamed as he jumped off the ledge and soared up into the amber sky. Chapter 41. Nothing could have prepared me for what it felt like to ride the back of a flying dragon. Seeing the ground so far away, the trees, the animals, the river, as if they were a toy model instead of the real world, was something I'd experienced before on an airplane. But without the window separating me from the world, without being strapped into a chair or safety net of any kind, it was so terrifying that my head spun and my heart pounded so fast that I felt it was about to beat right out of my chest. I held on to the dragon with every bit of strength I could muster, keeping my eyes up and praying it would end soon. We flew higher and higher until we were above the clouds, the amber sun shining down on us so strongly that it scorched my already burned skin. We circled the mountain, which, as Erebus told us, was now a straight wall to the top. Eventually, the cliff reached a plateau, although I couldn't see far due to the trees near the edge. The dragons landed close to the edge, lowering their wings and settling onto the ground so we could hop off their backs. It was a huge relief to be on solid land. My hands tingled from holding on to my dragon so tightly, and I flexed them to get my blood flowing, finally able to feel my fingers again. My dragon shifted back into human form, and the other two dragons followed his lead.
"The Titans are imprisoned in the center of the plateau,"
he told us.
"That is where the others of my kind likely took your friends. We will not go there, as our deal was to bring you to the top of the mountain, which we have done. We will wait for you here and fly you down to the portal once you've returned."
"Thank you," I said, checking my arrows to make sure I hadn't lost any of them during the flight. With only two used arrows and one crystal arrow left, I couldn't afford for anything to happen to them. To my relief, they were all in place. Danielle eyed up the golden sword in the leader's hand.
"I don't know what we'll be facing at the center of the mountain, but we'll likely need all of the weapons we can get," she said. "Is there any chance that we can borrow the sword? We'll return it to you the moment we're back."
"We made a deal,"
The dragon held the sword closer to his side.
This sword is mine now. You will have to manage without it.
We'll be fine, I told Danielle. I still have one crystal arrow, and two regular arrows.
And I have a knife, Chris added. We all have our knives. Don't forget about those.
Wonderful. Danielle sighed and looked longingly at the golden sword. How well are the Titans imprisoned again?
They're frozen in a lake,
Erebus told us.
It's the lake that begins the River of Dreams. The water in it is powerful enough to block their magic.
The female dragon whose mate he'd pulverized raised an eyebrow at him.
The top of the mountain is rarely visited, she said. How do you know all of this information?
I have my ways, he said.
And then he turned and led us into the forest, not allowing the dragons to ask any more questions. Chapter 42. We walked through the forest, the air growing colder and colder until I had to wrap my arms around myself to keep from shivering. The trees went from full and green to brown and bare, as if within an hour we'd traveled from summer to winter. Instead of leaves, icicles hung from the branches. It would have felt like a winter wonderland if it hadn't been for an eerie emptiness that filled the forest. The coldness, a sharp warning of danger that penetrated my bones. Eventually, the forest ended, and we stepped into a clearing with a lake in the center. In the middle of the lake, 12 creatures as large as giants were frozen from the waist down. As still and as pale as corpses, most of them had their eyes closed, but a few stared out into the forest. Their gazes empty and hollow. The ice had entrapped them, but lines spiderwebbed along the outside edge of the lake. Cracks. The cracks weren't close to the center yet, but it looked like in time they would make it there. I froze where I stood, not wanting to alert the creatures to our presence.
The 12 first-generation Titans,
Erebus explained, keeping his voice low.
As I already mentioned, they've been frozen in the lake since they were forced into Kerberos. Their powers are blocked, and after so many years of torture, they've lost themselves to their own minds. They won't know you're here unless you step foot onto the lake.
It's cracking, Danielle mentioned what I'd already observed. What happens when the cracks reach the Titans? Will they get their powers back? Will they be freed?
The cracks started forming on the night of the Olympian Comet,
Erebus told us.
There's no saying when they'll reach the center, but my guess is the summer solstice. Once that happens, the Titans will be able to escape their imprisonment, and the portal will be fully open, so they'll be able to go back through to Earth.
That's not going to happen,
Chris said, gripping the handle of his knife.
Well, maybe they'll escape the lake, but we'll close the portal first.
Yes, Danielle agreed. Although it would be nice if we actually knew how we're supposed to close the portal. She glanced sideways at Erebus, not so subtly hinting that she wanted him to tell us.
I'm not telling you now, he said. You're not ready yet. It would only distract you from the task you came here to complete.
Erebus is right, I said. We have to focus on doing what we came here to do. Getting back Blake and Medusa's head. Once we're back on Earth, then we'll turn Typhon to stone and figure out how to seal the portal. Since we can't seal the portal until we're back, it doesn't do us any good to worry about it now. Danielle nodded, although she didn't look convinced. Then I heard something from off in the distance. Clapping. I turned to look where it was coming from and saw Ethan standing on the top of a hill in front of a small cabin. He smirked as he stared down at us and continued to clap, finally stopping once he had our full attention.
I didn't think you would have the guts to follow me into Kerberos, he said, his voice booming across the clearing. Looks like you proved me wrong.
Two people I didn't recognize emerged from the cabin to stand on both sides of him. A man and a woman. From their bright red hair and lack of clothing, I assumed they were dragons. Likely the same two dragons that flew him and Blake to the top of the mountain. I steadied my bow at the sight of them, the crystal arrow strung through and ready to shoot. These weren't the same dragons who had made a deal with us. They owed us nothing. There was no reason to think they wouldn't attack on the spot. And without them having sworn an oath to Erebus, the god wouldn't be able to stop them like he'd done to the dragon who had gone back on his word in the jungle.
Helios instructed these two dragons of his to protect me,
Ethan explained, motioning to the dragons by his sides.
We knew you'd followed us through the portal, the moment one of Apollo's crystal arrows shot past us on our flight up here. I figured you would try to reach the top of the mountain, so I've been waiting for you, just in case you made it this far. I doubted you would.
He paused to study us, a manic smile crossing his face.
But I'm happy you did, he continued, because there's something inside that I've been dying to show you.
Chapter 43. Moving faster than a human could comprehend, I replaced the crystal arrow with a used arrow and shot it through the heart of the male dragon. Then I grabbed the second used arrow, strung it through my bow, and shot it through the heart of the female. They both fell to the ground, dead. Ethan glared at me, his hands tightening by his sides.
What was that for?
He asked, glancing at the slayed dragons. After the sacrifice I made when I got here, Helios would have forgiven you all for killing his immortal cow on his island. Now that you killed two of his dragons, I can't imagine that truce will stand.
What are you talking about? I pointed my remaining arrow, the crystal one, at Ethan's heart. And where's Blake?
Blake would have come running to us the moment he heard our voices, so I could only guess that he was being kept somewhere else. And since Ethan was the only one who might know where that place was, I had to keep him alive. For now. But despite everything I'd said back in the cave about wanting Ethan dead, now that I knew about the endless dark torture that would await him in the underworld of Kerberos, I wasn't sure that I could do it. Because Ethan was still one of us. A demigod. Before his sister had died, he'd helped us fight in Greece. He'd risked his life for us. I couldn't just forget about that as if it had never happened at all. He'd made bad choices, but he wasn't a monster. If someone I loved had been taken from me like his sister had been taken from him, and if a god told me they could bring them back, I don't imagine an offer like that would be easy to turn down. I wanted to think that I would have the strength to put the fate of the world before a single life, even the life of someone I loved. But I couldn't know what I would do in a situation like Ethan's, because I'd never had to face it. Yes, he'd made a huge mistake, but it wasn't over yet. He could still tell us where Blake was and return Medusa's head. He deserved a chance to redeem himself. Answer my question, I told him, zeroing in on his heart. Even though I didn't plan on killing him, I couldn't let him see my bluff. Where's Blake?
And Medusa's head,
Chris added.
That's what I wanted to show you,
Ethan said, still smiling manically.
And it's why I'm so happy you're here.
The dragons who were here to protect you are dead, I reminded him, pulling back on the string of my bow. We have the upper hand now, so stop stalling and answer our questions.
I suppose you do deserve an answer.
He stepped aside, motioning to the door of the cabin.
So here it is. Blake in Medusa's head. They're both inside. Go in and see for yourselves.
Chapter 44. Fighting my instinct to run straight into the cabin to see Blake, I adjusted my target and sent the arrow soaring toward it. Ethan must have had quick reflexes. I supposed it made sense, because he was a demigod as well, and he whizzed out of the way when the arrow came toward him. But the arrow turned to adjust its path, as if it had a mind of its own, and buried itself straight into my intended destination. Ethan screamed and fell to the ground, his hands flying to his knee. He yanked the arrow out and tried to stand up, but he didn't get far before crashing back down. He grunted and tried again, managing to slowly stand and balance on his good leg. He took one hop toward us and groaned again from the pain, although he sucked it up and took another hop. He stared at me, his eyes murderous and livid. I had no doubt that he wanted me dead. I hurried to one of the fallen dragons, yanked the arrow out of her heart, and strung it through my bow. From this angle, shooting it through Ethan's other knee was easy. He screamed again and fell back on the ground. With both kneecaps busted, he wouldn't be able to walk. But I didn't have any more time to pay attention to Ethan, because Blake was inside that cabin. I ran for the door, moving with demigod speed, anxious to see him again. This was it, the moment when Blake and I would be reunited. But Erebus appeared in front of me before I could blink, blocking my path. "What are you doing?" I tried to run around him, but he was faster than me, and he held his arms out to stop me. "Let me through."
"I can't do that."
He placed his hands on my shoulders to hold me still, his eyes serious.
"Ethan said that Medusa's head is in there too. For all you know, he positioned the head so it's staring at the door, so anyone who enters will be turned to stone. I'm the only one here who's immune to Medusa's gaze. You have to let me go in first."
"A trip like that would be a good idea."
Ethan laughed from his place on the ground, holding his hands over his kneecaps to stop the blood from pouring out.
"But it's not what I did. What I did is even better. And I can't wait to see your reaction when you see it for yourself."
I opened my mouth to ask what he did do, but I stopped myself. Nothing that Ethan said could be trusted. And as much as I hated to admit it, Erebus was right. He had to go first to make sure that it was safe. "Blake!" I yelled through the door and pounded my fists against it, hoping he could hear me. "We're sending in Erebus first. He's on our side. Once he checks out the inside of the cabin, I'm coming in right after him." There was no response. My heart dropped, and I stared helplessly at the door. I hoped that if anything, I would at least hear his voice. Blake would have answered me if he were in there. Which meant one thing. Ethan was lying. Blake wasn't in the cabin. In that case, I was glad that I'd shot Ethan in the kneecap and not in the heart. I needed him alive so he could tell us where Blake really was. Erebus dissolved into shadow form, leaving me outside in front of the cabin. Danielle and Chris stood behind me. I glanced over at Ethan, hoping to see a trace of humanity on his face. But he just watched me, still smiling like a crazy person, his eyes glowing with hatred. What happened to the Ethan that I'd met on the land of the Lotus Eaters, who had fought with us against Scylla and Charybdis, and had been on our side as we acquired the immortal milk from Helios's island? We didn't know him for long, but he had been our friend. I knew I hadn't imagined that. But after his sister died, he twisted into someone I didn't recognize. There was no point in trying to convince him that Rachel's death wasn't my fault, that he didn't have to punish us to get her back. He was too far gone for us to reason with him. He would never stop blaming me for what happened to her. We would never be safe as long as he was alive. Every instinct in my body told me to finish the job and kill him. But I couldn't.
not without being sure about what happened to Blake. I also still hated the idea of sending him to the underworld here, no matter how awful he'd been to us. So I turned away from him and marched to the other fallen dragon, pulling the arrow out of his heart and placing it into my quiver. Then I walked back over to stand with Chris and Danielle.
Once we get Blake and Medusa's head, we'll finish off Ethan and fly back with our dragons, Chris said, his voice strong and sure. We'll never have to worry about him coming after us again.
No one deserves to go to the underworld here, Danielle cut in. Maybe we should just leave him here on the mountain. He won't be able to get down with his knees busted up like that. We'll close the portal, and he'll be stuck here with all the other monsters who turned against the Olympians in the Second Rebellion. Never able to return to Earth again. I agree with Danielle, I said. I would send him to Hades in a heartbeat. But the underworld's here? I don't know if I could live with myself if we did that.
If we left him here, what would stop Helios's dragons from getting him and flying him back to the portal before we have time to close it?
Chris asked.
We can't leave him alive. Not after everything he's done. It's too risky.
You're both right. I sighed, pacing around in front of the cabin. What was taking Erebus so long? But as of right now, we still need Ethan alive. We can't kill him until we find Blake.
You don't want to kill me, Ethan grumbled. Once Helios finds out, he'll come for revenge the moment you step foot back on Earth.
Do you really think Helios cares about you? I reached for one of the arrows protruding from his knee and yanked it out, enjoying the pain in his scream. I yanked out the other arrow as well. I didn't even bother to wipe off the blood before sticking the arrows back into my quiver. Helios just needed you to do his dirty work for him, I continued. You were a pawn to him, that's all. Someone he could manipulate. Now that you've done what he wanted, I doubt he's even trying to get your sister back for you.
You're wrong.
Ethan held himself up on his elbows, gritting his teeth as he spoke. Sweat dripped down his face from the pain of his injuries.
Helios will get my sister back. And once he does, she'll kill you for what you did to her.
I turned my back to him, since what was the point in responding? Rachel wasn't coming back. And even if she did, I hoped that unlike her brother, she would see reason and realize that her death wasn't my fault. After all, the fight with the Hydra would have gone differently if she hadn't deviated from the plan and impulsively run to fight it without any backup. Before I could think about it anymore, Erebus appeared outside the cabin, his expression grim. My breath caught at the sight of him. I wanted to ask what was in there, but dread filled my chest at the possibility of what I might find out. Instead, I just watched him, waiting for his report.
Medusa's head has been destroyed,
he said, not meeting my eyes.
It won't turn anyone to stone ever again.
And Blake? I swallowed, terrified about whatever I was about to hear. But I couldn't wait any longer. I needed to know the truth.
He's dead,
Ethan laughed, his twisted, dark expression making my heart sink into my stomach.
I killed him.
Chapter 45.
You couldn't have, I said, refusing to believe it. Blake's strong. He would have fought you.
He is strong,
Ethan nodded, still smiling.
But you forget. I'm a demigod. I'm stronger. And I have the dragons on my side.
I opened the door to the cabin, preparing to prove him wrong. The world collapsed around me with what I saw inside. Blake lay in the center of the cabin, his eyes closed, surrounded by a pool of his blood. Cuts covered every bit of his skin, some of them shallow, some of them deep,
Blood was all over his body. It soaked his clothes. So much blood everywhere. Blake. I said his name softly and hurried over to him, resting my hand on his arm. He had to wake up. He had to. He couldn't be dead. Not here. Not in Kerberos. He'd been hurt, yes, and he'd lost a lot of blood. But he was strong. He would get better. Except that his body was cold. Normally, he exuded such warmth. But there was none of that now. There were so many cuts. And so much blood. No. My throat closed up, and I could barely get the word out. Tears streamed down my face and onto his chest. And I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think. You can't be gone, I said, shaking his arm to try to get him to wake up. This can't be real. I can't keep fighting without you. I love you, Blake. I never got to tell you, but I love you so much. I bit down on my lip and placed both hands on his chest, searching for a heartbeat, searching for anything to prove that he was still alive. There was nothing. His chest was cold, his heart still. But I couldn't give up. Because despite not being able to use our powers in Kerberos, and despite never being able to bring someone back from death before, I had to try to heal him. No, I had to do more than try. I had to succeed. Because I couldn't lose Blake. Not like this. If I couldn't heal Blake when he needed me most, what good was I at all? I closed my eyes and reached out with my mind, trying to locate white energy in the air around me. I searched and searched, pushing harder than I ever had before. But it was like floating in a vacuum. I couldn't feel anything there. I couldn't access my powers. I collapsed onto Blake's chest, the tears coming so quickly that I didn't think they would ever stop. Time stood still. Numbness sunk deep into my bones. And I felt as cold as Blake. I couldn't move. I couldn't think. All I could do was bury my face in his chest and cry. How was I supposed to continue on this mission without him? He'd been beside me from the moment I first discovered my powers. He'd helped me understand them, and helped me learn how to be as strong as I could be. He fought beside me, and protected me, and was there for me no matter what. I loved him, and even though I hadn't told him yet, and he hadn't told me yet, I knew in my heart that he loved me too. How could I accept that he was gone? That I would never see him again? I couldn't. I wouldn't. Because no soul was ever truly gone. Erebus had told us that himself on our way up the mountain. So I sat back and wiped the tears off my face. Danielle was beside me. She was crying too. Chris gripped the handle of his knife, looking ready to destroy whoever had done this to Blake. I had nothing to say to either of them right now. Instead, I focused on Erebus. He held the mutilated head of Medusa in his hands. Her eyes had been gouged in, making her useless. But I didn't care about that right now. There was only one thing I cared about. Blake. And so I leveled my gaze with Erebus's and asked, "How do we get to the underworld of Kerberos?"
Chapter 46.
You don't,
Erebus answered, not missing a beat.
Unless you die in Kerberos. There's no other way to get to the underworld. And once there, no one has ever escaped. It's impossible.
Could I die for the chance of finding Blake in the underworld? And do the impossible to figure a way out? I wanted to. If there was a chance to be with Blake again, I wanted to have it. But my family was waiting for me back home. My mom, my dad, and my sister. I loved Blake, but I loved my family too. I couldn't leave them like that. I would never be able to forgive myself for it. There has to be an entrance, I said instead. A way to get in without dying. There's an entrance to Hades from Earth, right? And Kerberos is a parallel dimension of Earth. So there must be an entrance to the underworld from here.
That's not how it works,
Erebus said.
Kerberos is a prison world that can be reached from Earth, not a parallel world. Once someone dies in Kerberos, they're gone forever.
Not gone, I corrected him. You said yourself that no one is ever truly gone. They're just trapped in the underworld. Lost, but not gone.
Being in the underworld of Kerberos is the same as being gone,
Erebus said. No, I shook my head, refusing to believe it.
Yes,
he said,
and with Medusa's head destroyed, there's no stopping Typhon now. He will rise. You will fail to seal the portal. The Titans will return, and Earth will be destroyed. There's no other possible path. You failed.
Then my family's dead anyway. I reached for Blake's cold, dead, bloodied hand. A new wave of tears escaping when I felt how lifeless he was. Maybe I should just go outside and ask Ethan to kill me. I'm sure he would be happy to do it. Then I could be with Blake.
Weren't you listening when I told you what the underworld is like here?
Erebus asked.
You wouldn't be joining Blake. You would both be two souls floating in the darkness, never able to meet or interact. You would be condemning yourself to an eternity of emptiness.
So then what else is there left for us to do? I asked. Go back to Earth and die there, so we can be with our family in Hades?
If Hades still exists after the Titans take over,
Erebus said.
I wouldn't put it past the Titans to destroy the underworld, too. So we failed,
Chris said.
All because we decided to trust that backstabbing son of Zeus out there. He's the reason Kate's gone. He's the reason Blake's gone. And he's the reason that the whole world will soon be gone.
He held up his knife, his eyes gleaming with hatred.
I'm going out there to bury this knife in his heart myself.
Yes, I nodded, regretting that I'd shot Ethan in the knee and not the heart. Do it. He nodded and headed toward the door. I would go out there to help him, or do it myself. But I couldn't leave Blake here alone. I worried that if I left him out of my sight for even one second, he would be gone, and I refused to leave him here in Kerberos. Instead, I would bring his body back with us to Earth. I might not be able to bring people back from the dead yet, but I would work on it. After all, I could use my power to kill. With enough practice, why couldn't I use my power to bring people back to life, too?
Wait, Danielle said, stopping Chris in his tracks. What if there's still a way we can fix this?
There's no way to fix this,
Erebus said.
I've already told you. You've failed. From this point forward, there's no possible path that will lead to the future you desire.
Which is why we won't fix it from this point.
Danielle looked off to the side. The gears practically turned in her head as she spoke.
But what if we can go back and fix it from the past?
I'm listening.
Erebus leaned against the wall and crossed his arms, his gaze locked on Danielle's.
First of all, answer this, Danielle said to him. Do you know all of the other primordial deities?
Yes, of course,
he said.
We're the oldest beings in the universe. It would be impossible for us not to have met at one point or another.
Can you contact them at all?
Sure,
he said.
If we feel like reaching out, and they feel like listening. But there's no promising that both of those things will happen.
Danielle stood up, her hands clenched at her sides, her eyes gleaming with determination. She faced Erebus as an equal, not as a mortal speaking to a god. And he held his gaze with hers, seeming intrigued by her every word.
Do you think you can contact Kronos?
She asked him, calm and steady.
Kronos,
Erebus repeated, saying the name as if remembering an old friend.
I'll see what I can do.
Then he dissolved into a shadow and was gone. Chapter 47.
Who's Kronos?
I looked to Danielle for answers, not letting go of Blake's cold hand. Before she had a chance to answer, Erebus reappeared in the same place he was standing earlier. Except this time, he was joined by an older man with gray hair, a long gray beard, wise eyes, and an unearthly glow.
I am Kronos,
the man answered.
The primordial deity of time itself.
I blinked, taking in what he'd said. You can control time? I asked him, hope rising in my chest. You can change the past?
I cannot control time,
he said with a kind smile.
Time is an essence that cannot be controlled, not even by the gods. I can, however, travel through the fourth dimension and access any point in the past. Once there, I can make changes as I see fit. Although I try not to change much, since messing with time can get quite complicated, even for a primordial deity like myself.
But since you came here so quickly, it means you see why we need to make changes, right? Chris asked.
We didn't come here quickly,
Erebus chuckled, his eyes dark.
It took me weeks to convince Kronos to meet with me. By then, the spring equinox had passed, and Typhon had risen from Mount Etna. Despite all of the destruction, and despite my telling him that the rise of the Titans was inevitable, Kronos insisted that there was still a chance that the three of you would close the portal. He gave me no choice but to wait it out. Once the three of you failed, he gave in and brought us back here.
Back up a second. Danielle held up a hand, her forehead crinkled. You can travel through time? So why did you have to wait for those weeks to pass? Couldn't you have just popped into the future, taken a look at what happened, and then come back?
The future is not written in stone,
Kronos said, watching her calmly.
There are many possible paths that the future can take at any given time, and those paths are constantly changing based on every decision made. Even deities like Nyx and Erebus, who can see where those paths might lead, are not always correct. The future is in constant flux, and it doesn't exist yet. Therefore, I can only travel to the past. The moment I make myself known in the past and create changes, that moment becomes the present. It's impossible to predict exactly which future those changes will create until the present plays out on its own.
So when Erebus found you, and both of you saw us fail to close the portal by the summer solstice, That was the present, I said, doing my best to understand this. But since you traveled back to this point in the past, this is now the present, and the future that you saw is erased?
Precisely.
Kronos smiled.
Do you see now why I avoid changing the past?
I guess, I said, although it was definitely still confusing. But you're here now, so that must mean you want to help us, right?
The point when Medusa's head was destroyed seems to be the moment that the rise of the Titans became inevitable,
Kronos said.
So yes, I will allow the three of you to travel back in time to a moment when you can retrieve Medusa's head while it was still intact.
We can save Blake, I whispered.
And Kate,
Chris added.
Don't forget about Kate.
You're right, I told him, smiling. We can go back to before we beheaded Medusa, and we can save both of them. We'll go back to the day before the fight in L.A. Then we can do whatever we need to stop Ethan from going through with his crazy plan and warn Kate about what will happen to her so she can take proper precautions. We'll have both of them back. It'll be like the past nightmarish week never even happened.
I'm afraid that I can't allow you to go that far back,
Kronos told us, his eyes sad. Why not? I dropped Blake's hand and stood up, looking at Kronos straight on. You're the god of time. You just said you could send us back. So why can't we go back to that moment?
I said I would send you back to retrieve Medusa's head before it was destroyed.
He corrected me.
But I absolutely cannot send you back to before you beheaded her. If I do, there's a chance that something else will happen during that fight that will result in an even worse situation, such as Medusa being victorious and turning you all to stone. It's a risk we cannot take. We defeated Medusa once,
Chris said, slashing his knife through the air.
We can do it again, especially since this time, Ethan won't be there to sabotage us. I'm sorry.
Kronos shook his head.
Since you were already successful in beheading Medusa in this timeline, I will not send you back to before that moment. We can't risk having any other possible outcome from that fight.
Then when will we go back to? I asked.
You will go back to the latest moment possible, as to cause the least number of changes in the timeline,
he said.
You will go back to Kerberos right after Ethan steps through the portal with Blake. Ethan closed Medusa's eyes before coming through the portal, and he put her head back in his bag, so you won't be in danger of catching her gaze and turning to stone. You can take care of Ethan, retrieve Medusa's head, and bring it back to Kerberos.
And Blake will be okay, I said, more than ready to erase these past few days forever.
Yes.
Kronos nodded.
I'm doing this to help you acquire Medusa's head, and one of the side effects will be that Blake will still be alive. But,
he said, looking seriously at the three of us,
when Helios allowed Ethan and his dragons to kill Blake, he considered that to be punishment for all of you after what you did to his cattle. A life for a life. Once you change the past, you will change that too. Helios will still be looking to punish you. And while the group of you are powerful, you are not powerful enough to take down a god. Only another god is strong enough to do that.
I reached for the sun pendant on my necklace, holding it between my fingers. Luckily, we have some gods on our side, I said, thinking back to those few minutes when Apollo had visited us in the cave. Hopefully my father will be willing to help. We have my ancestor, and Chris's too, Danielle added. Aphrodite and Zeus. And Blake's ancestor. She glanced at his body and quickly turned away, as if it pained her too much to see him this way. Who is his godly ancestor? No one ever told us.
Ares,
Erebus answered, as if it should have been obvious.
The god of war.
Sounds like the kind of god we need on our side, Chris said, and I nodded in agreement. And what about you? Danielle asked Erebus, stepping toward him. She reached for his hands, but stopped herself, dropping her arms back to her side. You've done so much for us already, and you have no idea how grateful I am. But you're not just going to leave.